And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this Saturday morning. What I've got to do is I'm fixing to share some information with you and a bit of new research, but I want you to be very careful how you take it. There's always a possibility that when I come up with information or when I read information or share information or tell you things that are like cutting edge studies, somebody might make a drastic maneuver to say, oh my goodness, I don't need any drugs anymore. Well, that's never what I'm saying. No. But let me give you an example right here. Okay, let's say, for example, you have a physician that prescribes you a drug to lower your cholesterol. And I'm telling you right now, that is one of the most challenging topics of all time, because there's been such a good job at promoting a certain class of drugs that without even question, there's no conversation, no one's curious about them. They just take the drugs to see what happens. You know, they're basing it on the recommendations of an individual that wrote a prescription, which I'm not saying that's wrong. But let me give you an example. What is the net result of taking a cholesterol-lowering drug for, say, 7 years? Well, one result would be that because of the side effects of the drug, which there are some good effects, I mean, I'll give you that, but for a lot of people, they have no family history of diabetes, no one's ever had diabetes, or what if in your family tree you have aunts and uncles or grandparents or parents and they have developed diabetes? Well, let's just say that your mother is 78 years old and all of a sudden now she has a very mild case of diabetes, whereas she did not before. Well, just knowing that information, what if the physician has prescribed for you a drug to lower your cholesterol? And I'm really not trying to get into that conversation too deep, but if you look at the studies, and if I'm not mistaken, it's exactly 84 months, or that's 7 years. And so if a person is taking on average a statin drug to lower their cholesterol for 7 years, well then bingo, guess what they get out of it? They probably have the highest possible chance of developing a type 2 adult onset diabetes. Please look it up for yourself, be super curious, ask questions, question everything, it's fine. Well, you're probably going, well, no one gave me full disclosure and told me that I was going to develop diabetes as a consequence of taking this drug for 7 years. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you some information right now. I'm kind of switching gears. But when you hear this information, it's going to sound probably way, way, way too good to be true. So what I want you to do is I want you to look it up for yourself. I want you to question everything. And so there was a human study, and you know what? I'm so sorry. I don't have the study. I did look at it, though. And the study was for a duration of 5 weeks. And it wasn't a big study, but what I'm going to read to you is where they tried to repeat it. And so let me just read this brief abstract to you. People who have been diabetic for decades, and when I say decades, you know what that means. That's like 10 years. And decades with an S, that means more than two decades, like 20, 30 years. Anyway, people who have been diabetic for decades, and they need to use insulin. And when I say insulin, you can see it in your mind. There is a bottle of a clear liquid, but that clear liquid is a drug called insulin. And they're going to have to insert a needle into the bottle, extract a certain amount of insulin, or, you know, like 30 units, and they're going to place it into their body and inject it. Pretty good chance if you see someone's tummy that has bruises all over it, well, that may be a pretty clear idea they've been injecting with insulin, okay? People who have been diabetic for decades and who need to use insulin can stop using their diabetes medication if they start intermittent fasting. Now, that's where I'm going to caution you. I am not telling every listener out there to stop your medication. I'm not doing that. But what I'm doing is I'm sharing you information. And you know what the prize is of sharing this information? What if it improves your health, what I'm telling you? And what if you have a greater functional capacity, which means You sleep deeper and better at night. You have more energy throughout the day. You're able to accept the challenges that are placed before you and do the work that you were designed to do. And then in turn, you can bless your family and you can bless your brothers and sisters in Christ. And you can be ready to serve God with the best of your abilities. So if you have great functioning physically, mentally, and emotionally, and spiritually, that's like totally awesome. Talk about a great life. Okay. So if you start intermittent fasting, there may be a chance you may be able to modify your medication, which has side effects. At least that was the case with 3 type 2 diabetics that the researchers at the University of Toronto in Canada wrote about in the British Medical Journal case reports, which I know you've heard of it before. The British Medical Journal, it's one of the most prestigious, peer-reviewed, studied, looked at journals in all the universe when it comes to medicine. It's spectacular. I've read many articles from it that I thought were totally cool, and they were very enlightening, and I thought, oh, this is an aha moment. Okay, here goes. In May of 2018, we wrote about a small human study in which intermittent fasting in pre-diabetic people increased insulin sensitivity. That's a good thing. And so what happened was they did this in pre-diabetics. That means people that might be on the edge, you know, these might be people that have a fasting glucose of, say, 106 or 112 or 113. Not exactly diabetic. Technically, to be diabetic, you need 2 readings of a fasting glucose at 126. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, is that not normal? No, it's not. You want your blood sugar probably being, like I told a woman the other day, it's really, really easy to lose weight if your fasting glucose can go below 90. I mean, they have numerous studies demonstrating that. And so when your glucose, your blood sugar, your fasting blood sugar starts going above 90, it gets a little bit harder. Could you imagine if somebody checks their glucose levels in the morning or before they go to bed, and they read 169 at bedtime, but when they wake up, it's 242. Well, some things are not right there. There's room for improvement. And so this group of Canadians, they said, okay, we get it. We see this study. It's very impressive. It's in the British Medical Journal. Must be valid. But you're using it on pre-diabetics. We're not talking about people that are full-blown diabetics. And so the Canadians from the University of Toronto, I know that's obvious, it's redundant, they went a step further. And what they did was they experimented with 3 men who had been diabetic for years. And these men, they actually had to use insulin. They just weren't using metformin only. Okay, here's case number 1 right here. And just kind of think about what I'm saying. Case number 1 was a 40-year-old man who had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes 20 years ago. You know what that means? That means he was 20 years old. They say that he also had high blood pressure and high cholesterol, which means he was given medications to regulate and control his blood pressure. And he's only 40 years old, by the way. And he was given a statin drug to regulate the high cholesterol. All right. Before he went to bed, he injected himself with 58 units of the long-acting insulin. Okay. During the day, he injected twice with 22 units of fast-acting insulin. Maybe he did that after breakfast, and maybe he did that after lunch, or in the middle of the afternoon. And so, in addition, he took another drug. I can't pronounce it. And it was, but the purpose of the drug, it was to try to improve insulin sensitivity so he could actually get the blood sugar. Instead of being high in the arteries, he tried to get it into the cells. And then he took 1 gram of metformin twice a day. Now, Both of those drugs I'm talking about that he's taken orally, they're oral glucose-lowering drugs. Does that make sense? And yes, they do have side effects. Yes, I know that metformin can work wonders, but some people, it works wonders by causing gut issues and diarrhea. So anyway, so let me get to the punchline right here. Here was what he did differently. And so even though he's on 58 units of insulin before he goes to bed, 22 units probably after breakfast, or maybe at breakfast time, and then 22 units another time of the day. It didn't say, but I tried to look it up. So here's the new plan that he tried. And just listen to what I'm saying right here. Every other day, the man ate only one meal. So let me just kind of make up something right here. Let's say the every other day was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And so on the other days, he ate only twice, in the afternoon and in the evening. So let's just say that was 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock. Okay? He lost 12% of his weight and 13% of his waist, and he felt fine. There were no issues. And so what happened was he started out at 184.36 pounds. I had to actually make the conversion from kilograms because it's Canadian. I guess they're on the metric system. So I do know how to punch the numbers into a calculator. So what happened was over, and this study was for 5 weeks. So he went from 184.36 pounds to 162.36, which means he lost exactly 22 pounds, but remember, he felt fine. He never complained that he was being denied. Yes, it takes a little while with intermittent fasting or fasting to get your body to adapt to it, but guess who wins? You do. Okay, case number two. Case number two was a 52-year-old male who had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes 25 years earlier. That means the guy was, what, 27? He also had kidney disease. That is not good. That's one of the negative effects of having blood sugar that's way high. It just rips the kidneys to shreds. The kidneys cannot handle a ton of sugar. It just wears them out. Okay? So he was on high blood pressure medication. He had high cholesterol, which he took a drug for that also. He injected twice a day with 25 units of the fast-acting form of insulin. So the man followed the same fasting regimen as in man number one or case number one, and it says without experiencing any problems. And I can tell you doing this a long time and talking to people, sometimes people are quite terrified what's going to happen if they don't eat, you know, 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 times a day where they snack all day long. It says that he lost 18% of his weight and 22% of his waist just magically disappeared. And so, oh, and I forgot to tell you from patient number one, I'm so sorry. This is like a pretty big deal right here. I can't believe I forgot to say it. They have a category called number of days to come off insulin. So the first man was injecting over 100 units of insulin. Guess how long it took once he started this intermittent fasting for him to not even need the medication, which you got to understand, I am not telling you right now to stop anything. Go talk to your doctor about this. Read some studies. Come up with a game plan. But it took in case number one, the very first man that had had the diabetes for 20 years, it took exactly 5 days until he no longer required insulin. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, my doctor's never told me that. I've never heard that from anybody. But it's true. can't make this stuff up. So it took him exactly 5 days until his body started to work properly on its own where he didn't even require insulin. Does that make sense? Okay. Back to patient number two. He was taking 25 units of insulin twice a day. And he started out I just did the conversion here. Let's just say over 5 weeks, patient number two, he lost 23.32 pounds. And so at the end of the 5 weeks, he was completely off all his diabetic medications. He was taking no longer any more insulin. That wasn't good English, but you know what I mean. He no longer required insulin, which means his body was able to manage blood sugar without insulin. How long did it take him? Well, he took a little bit longer. It took him exactly 18 days before he no longer required insulin. I think that's pretty much impressive right there. Okay, patient number three. He was a 67-year-old male who had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes at age 57. So let's just say he had it for 10 years. Okay, if I can round it off. He also had high blood pressure, just like the first two men. And he had high cholesterol, which, let me just tell you how this works. The more insulin resistance you have, the more insulin, it's going to tell your body to produce more cholesterol. You want your cholesterol to be normal? You want your cholesterol to be lower for whatever reason? Well, then you've got to stop the high levels of insulin in order to do that. Okay. It says every day he swallowed a gram of metformin, that'd be 1,000 milligrams, and every morning he injected 30 units of insulin called Lispro, and each evening he injected an additional 20 units of the insulin also. It said this man ate once a day, three times a week. On the other 4 days, he only ate afternoon and evening. And you can tell real quick, this is not the traditional American way of eating. You're not eating breakfast, lunch, and supper, and multiple snacks, which I have had registered dietitians tell me that that's the greatest technique of all time for managing diabetes. Not all of them, but some of them, yes. And so I would just counter that and say maybe there's a different way. So this man, he was 67. He started out at 213.62 pounds. And at the end of 5 weeks, he weighed 193.82, which means he lost 19.8 pounds. And I know you've heard me say this before, but when the Wall Street Journal had complete, unfettered access to the company called Weight Watchers, they were able to look at their statistics and make an observation about what the results really were. And it's like anything else. You know, if you have a health care plan that's not traditional, and it's like a medical sharing plan, they probably have what you would call a platinum plan. And then they might have, a silver, or maybe it's gold, silver, and bronze. Or maybe it's platinum, iron, and aluminum plan. You know, I'm just joking about that. But, you know, with each one, they cost more. So, like, those that probably bought into the greatest plan, the most expensive one that Weight Watchers offered, if I'm not mistaken, the net result of the Wall Street Journal's analysis was, even if you bought into every different angle that they offered to help assist you in losing weight, and I don't really know what that is. I'm just being honest with you. I haven't really looked at it. But let's just say they offered you online classes. And maybe they gave you daily email updates. And maybe they offered some personalized coaching, whether it be on the phone or through text or online. And maybe they offered you some different products to purchase that might, you know, be touted as these are weight loss aids. And maybe they had a personal trainer come up with like a regimen for you. So the net result of doing all these things that they were recommending, I think the average weight loss was 1.2 pounds a month. That'd be like over 4 weeks. Or, you know, some months, let's just say it's 4 weeks and 3 days. So this study that I'm referring to, where these men were able to get off all their diabetic medications and off, they were completely off the insulin. By the way, the third guy that went from 213 to 193, that's 20 pounds. It took him exactly 13 days until his body no longer required insulin. I know this is a scary, scary topic. I'm not trying to terrify you. I am not trying to scare you, but I'm trying to give you information because it's really incompatible with great health and a long life to have diabetes. It is. Now, some people have a rough go of it, and they have to do a much better job of it. Or they have to work four times as hard as everybody else if they have type 1 diabetes. But you know what? You got to play the hand you're dealt. And so you tell me, 5 weeks with 20 to 23 pounds or 23 and a half pounds weight loss. I know that wasn't a big study, but it worked for all three men. So on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they just ate one meal a day. So I can I just kind of explain what that might look like in simplicity? Let's just say that last night you ate your last meal at 6 o'clock or 6 p.m., okay? And you feel fine, you're satisfied, it was a very good meal, you made some pretty good choices, it wasn't like a junk food meal, it was actually real food that God has made. You know, things that your body can use to maintain the health of the human organism. What if you wake up in the morning, like now, and you tell yourself, I'm not going to eat anything? And you kind of set your mind like flint. And, you know, the other thing that helps is you might want to read that chapter in the book of Isaiah about fasting. It's a good one. And so I'm not trying to make it say something that it's not saying, but there's a verse or two in there that suggests that during the type of fast that God likes or the ones that he approves of, which I think is very important, that healing takes place to the body. Oh my goodness, is that true or is that true? Yes, that is true. Oh, what if you don't eat any breakfast or any lunch or snacks and you just set your mind like flint that I'm going to go all day long and I'm only going to eat at 6 o'clock? And you know, the thing of it is, you could probably eat quite a bit of food for that meal if you wanted to. And usually it's around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you haven't had breakfast or lunch, you're going to start having a conversation with yourself. I think I need to eat something now. And yeah, isn't that what fasting is? That's probably what the Christian life is on a larger scale. It's about denying yourself. Do you always give your body everything that your taste buds say that it needs? No. It is not to your benefit. But my point is, healing takes place when you make yourself a little bit uncomfortable. I don't even get this concept that there's no sacrifices you have to make. There's no course corrections. And you don't have to deny yourself, you know, Coca-Cola and alcohol, beer and junk food in order to get well. You can just keep everything as it is. That's just an impossible thought. You know, you've got to have some stress on your body for it to make repairs. It's just the way it is. And so wouldn't that be maybe an explanation of what exercise is? Yes. You make your body obey you. If I ask you, do you want to go for a walk when it's 32 degrees outside and it's windy? Well, the answer is no. That's uncomfortable. But what if you make your body walk briskly and you're averaging a 15-minute mile? And you do that for, 20, 30, 40 minutes. Well, that is a certain form of stress. And when you're under stress, your body says, oh my goodness, she or he is asking me to heal. So, do you get what I'm talking about here? If you go all day long without eating, that's essentially a 24-hour fast. Well, I'm fixing to read to you the next study here, because magical things truly happen when you deprive your body of food. So if you don't eat food, what is the number one thing that's going to happen? Well, if you don't give your body food, what is your body going to eat? It's going to eat you. And what I want you to get is, if you don't give your body food, yeah, your body's going to eat something. It's going to eat everything that you want it to eat. It's going to be everything from stored fat. It might even be, maybe you have an infection of some kind. Well, fasting has been shown to help the immune system, the body, to remove that's causing the infection. You just have your immune system go over there and eat the bacteria or eat the virus or eat the fungus or the parasite. I know I'm making it sound simple, but it does. There's a component where it works that way. But what if fasting causes regeneration of tissues and healing and repair? Isn't that kind of the healing that you want, where your body's actually stronger and the tissues are healthier and you're more vibrant than what you were? Yeah. You know, I've told you this a whole bunch of times about Dr. Robert Fivecoat. He was my clinic supervisor. And I'll just repeat the story briefly. Before I started working under his license or authority in the clinic or the hospital, he I still remember the very first day. It was probably during the summertime. They let the lower classmen in the college go to the student lounge like it was supposed to be some great event, and like this is the most happening. It was none of that. But here's what I discovered. There's times in the world you just don't know what to expect, and maybe you kind of build something up in your mind as being greater than what it was. But I remember when I was allowed, you had to be allowed and get permission to go visit the student lounge where the upperclassmen or the interns, where they ruled the day. And this is where they could actually see patients. And you understand why. It's a training process. It would be like a medical student becoming an intern at a hospital. That's probably where some of his real training in the real world exists, because it's a little bit different than having a book open and you read about a disease. But when you have a person walk in with it and they're a real live human being, and on top of that, you've got the mama crying, and you got the baby crying, and the dad is beside himself because somebody is really, really sick and nobody can figure it out. And you're just wanting to, play your role in helping the world to become a better place. And so as I looked at these students, I have never seen a bunch of more negative people in my life. Let me tell you why. Because what they felt like their responsibility, the interns, the student interns, you know, the upperclassmen, the ones that were getting their training at the hospital, they would just tell you, listen, you've got all these requirements, it's going to be nearly impossible to do. And when I looked around, there were probably three or four doctors, and they were clean-cut, good-looking guys. One of them was a woman. That's not a guy. It's a woman. She was very nice-looking. But when I listened to them talk, they made it sound as if it's impossible to complete the course requirements in the course of 12 months or a year, or 13 months, whatever it was. Meaning you had to get so many CAT scans and MRIs, and you had to do a bunch of lab work, which I've always liked lab work, because I think it's so revealing of the body. And then you had to do so many x-rays, you had to do like a lot of examinations, and they had to be this type of exam, that one. You just got to keep showing that you're proficient. And you got to give so many case studies. And you got to stand up and, you know, tell the other interns, you know, what you're dealing, doing a case study, what happened with this patient, how did it work out. And then you get to let them criticize you, where they say, well, did you think of this? And you go, wow, I never thought of that. Thanks for bringing that up. But it's just a learning proposition. You get that? But I figured out something real quick. They all went out of their way to tell me that I did not want Dr. Fivecoat to be my clinic supervisor. Because why? Because he was an old fuddy-duddy. Because he was 93 years old and he was short. I think Dr. Fivecoat might have been 5'3", 5'4". So he had on his full-length white clinical lab coat, stethoscope around his neck, had his like x-ray badge to measure, I guess, exposure to radiation. We were all required to do that. The thing of it is, Dr. Fivecoat had really thick Coke bottle lenses for glasses. And so he kind of stood out. But I'm going to tell you right now, he was a very gentle man. He was very cool. He was very calm. I don't ever remember him complaining one time. That was not his operating procedure. And I'm telling you, I like that. Do you ever get your fill of being around people that are so negative, they don't have anything good to say about anybody or any situation or anything? There's just like one complaint after the other. I am completely convinced that when you go to Scripture and it says, do everything without arguing and complaining, that you may become blameless and pure, you know what? Not only does that benefit you, but it benefits everybody else around you. And plus, it shows that you're trusting in God, which means get to work, don't complain, and pray as if everything it depends upon God. What's the second part of that phrase? Work as if everything depends on you. Isn't there a verse that says, whatsoever your hands findeth to do, work at it with all your might as serving God and not man? It does not say, complain as if your life depends on it. No. But anyway, so I'm just wasting your time now. I apologize. But what I was trying to say is, everybody told me that Dr. Fivecoat was not sophisticated enough. They told me that he didn't have enough master's and PhD degrees like all the young studs did. And so I needed to follow the young guys instead of the old guy, which none of this could be further from the truth. No way. Dr. Fivecoat, the guy was magical. When I say magical, I don't mean he took a staff and threw it down in a snake form. That's not what I'm saying. I just mean it was incredible, his ability to size up a situation. And I remember he could tell when I was frustrated. I tell you what, in the real world, you come face to face with people that are all crying and they're stressed and they think they're going to die and there's a major problem and they are feeling horrible, like this is not going well. What's wrong with me? And I would go to Dr. Fivecoat. Yeah, okay, I was young. I was in my early 20s. He'd probably size me up, and he wouldn't ever try to console me. He would just say stuff. Well, he did, but this is his standard phrase. He said, Roy, there's got to be something really simple that we can figure out to do here. And I didn't tell you what I did. If I got stuck and couldn't figure it out, I'd call Dr. Fivecoat, and I said, Dr. Fivecoat, I don't know what's going on here. Could you please help me out? Oh my goodness, he would walk in the room and within minutes he would figure it out. And then when he figured it out, there would be sometimes instantaneous relief of the patient. And I'd go, oh my goodness, this guy's like a genius. He's so good at everything. And you know what? That's always what I wanted to be known for, is just I want to be well-rounded, that I can handle a lot of things. But it's just so exciting to be able to look at God's creation. And so what do you think I'm telling you about fasting for? If you give your body a chance under the right circumstances, what can your body do? Your body can do just like Dr. Fivecoat used to tell me. There's got to be a simple solution to this problem, Roy. How are we going to get the body to heal? Who knows? Wouldn't this be funny if I turned into Dr. Robert Fivecoat, if I was 93 years old and I had thick Coke bottle glasses and gray hair? Wait, I already have gray hair. But anyway, he was such a good man. And you know what? I learned so much from him. You know the other thing that he would tell me all the time? He would just say, Roy, I need you to understand something. He said, and he was an Italian man, but I really liked him. But Dr. Fivecoat would say, he said, you have to understand, if the cells and the tissues of the body break down at a faster rate than the ability of the body to heal or repair them, you're going to have disease every time. And that means symptoms. And so whoever's listening right now, if you're not feeling so good and you're stuck and you can't find a way out of it, well, one thing that we got to focus on is, under these circumstances, you've got all these symptoms you don't like. Well, you know this is God's design for your body. It's trying to tell you that you need to change something or do something differently. And we need to find a way to target what is the weak. That's probably one of the best things that Dr. Fivecoat taught me, is he would always say, where's the focus? And let me tell you what he meant by that. If you ever heard the term, where's the focus, he means, where is the problem originating from? What is the primary problem? Because if you don't do that, then you're basically just giving out drugs or even natural remedies or herbs or vitamins to take a shotgun approach trying to fix anything and everything. You've got to prioritize, which I know this is traditionally, it's really, really hard to find out what the root cause of a problem is. You know what's super easy? You got knee pain? let's just give you a bunch of Advil. Let's give you Tylenol. Let's give you another stronger prescription drug. Well, what if you have chest pain? You could actually be sitting on the front porch, and you could have pain go down your left arm, pain up in your jaw. You could break out in a sweat. You could be nauseated. You could have indigestion. And what is your body telling you right there? It's telling you that you're having a heart attack. All that pressure in your chest, like there's an elephant sitting upon it and you can't breathe, that is your body telling you that you're having a heart attack. Or another way of saying it is, you're not able to get enough oxygen to the heart muscle and it's cramping up. That's what a heart attack is. It is one big honking Charlie horse of the heart. And so you have a choice to either pay attention to that. And you know what? There shouldn't be any doubt. Your life flashes before your eyes with this chest pain, and you thought to yourself, well, maybe now I understand I shouldn't be eating all this junk that I'm eating and drinking soda waters all day long and eating candy and cookies. Yeah, that's probably what flashes before your mind. Anyway, let me go on to study number two. This one is literally spectacular. So a lot of these times I come across these studies, and when I'm trying to read them, the study headline makes me really, really curious and really interested. And I'm disappointed when I read the study because I'm going, okay, that's really not that impressive. But you know what? If you get a lot of money as a research grant, you got to find a way to put it together. And sometimes these studies are slightly exaggerated. I know this is going to be hard for you to believe, but there have been many drugs that have been so promising where they said this is going to be the miracle cure for Alzheimer's or diabetes or heart disease, only at the last moment for them to completely crash and burn and fail, even though they had 20 years of research into it. So I think you know where this is coming from. Money has a way of changing the outcome. Anyway, I really don't know that there's that much money involved in this study right here, but let me read this to you. And so what I want you to do is please just listen to this and open your heart up and just see what you can do with this, because this one is a really impressive one. Now, that's my opinion. You are completely welcome to have your own opinion. All I'm really asking you to do is just consider what I'm saying and you decide for yourself. Isn't that what you do with the Word of God? You hear 1,000 different opinions, but what you really want to do is just read the Word of God and see what it says. And that way you can test everything. Okay. Here's the title of the article. Fasting activates stem cells to regenerate tissues. That's what I'm building up to. You want your body to repair what's broken, right? You want to rejuvenate, don't you? Well, it uses the word regenerate. That might be one of the best things you can focus on when it comes to healing your body, is a little bit of regeneration. Okay. A spectacular animal study published by biologists from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. That's probably not really an impressive place where the brightest minds in America are, is it? You ever heard of MIT? Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Okay, I think it was published in a journal called Cell Stem Cell. And what they're showing is how fasting rejuvenates tissues. Really? Have you read of a drug regenerating tissues? Have you read of any combination of chemotherapy or radiation or surgery that rejuvenates and regenerates tissues? Does aspirin regenerate tissues? Does high blood pressure? No. If during a period of fasting the body no longer uses glucose as fuel, that's what fasting is supposed to accomplish, and it starts to use fatty acids instead, that means fat that's on your body, stem cells, which maybe you haven't heard of stem cells. Stem cells are capable of making anything that you need. They are like the most loving, tender-hearted factories that are there, and they are more than willing to make whatever you need. This is God's great design. So when you fast, you don't use glucose anymore. You're starting to use fatty acids. Well, bingo, what happens? Stem cells get this incentive to regenerate old and damaged tissues. Okay, here's a study. And I'm just going to quote the research leader. His name is Omer Yilmaz of MIT in a press release. And it was released in ScienceDaily.com, May the 3rd, 2018, in case you want to look it up. He says, fasting has many effects in the intestine, which include boosting regeneration as well as potential uses in any type of ailment that impinges upon the intestine, such as infections or cancers. And Omer Yilmaz is the lead biologist of the study. Let me go ahead and quote again. Understanding how fasting improves overall health, including the role of adult stem cells in intestinal regeneration, in repair, and in aging, is a fundamental interest of my laboratory. Okay, I like that. The researchers had a group of mice fast one day. That means exactly 24 hours without food. Yes, they gave them all the water they wanted. And for all I know, maybe they gave them green tea or white tea or herbal tea. Probably hibiscus. And so the other group of lab mice, they were given food or mouse chow, feed. The researchers then extracted stem cells from the intestinal crypts of the mice, and they looked at the extent to which the stem cells were able to form new intestinal tissue. Now, this is going to be a new term for you, but just hear it, because I want you to know this. Such pieces of new tissue formed by the stem cells are called organoids. Okay, organoids. The more organoids from the stem cell, the larger these things become, the greater the body's ability to repair and rejuvenate tissues. And so, folks, the only thing that they're looking at here is the stem cells from the intestines. They're not looking at stem cells in the bone marrow. No. They're not looking at stem cells in the liver or the spleen or the thymus or the thyroid. They're not. And so what they're doing is they're just showing that when you fast, all of a sudden these mice, they start making organoids that go and repair the mammary gland. Do you know what that means? It repairs the breast in a woman or a female. Yes, females have breasts, males do not. Thank the good Lord. They also showed that when they fasted the intestines, they tried to repair the liver. They made liver organoids and the pancreas. Do you know anyone that has diabetes out there? Well, guess what happens? When you fast, maybe this is one of the ways that your body heals itself. It starts growing new tissue for the pancreas. And so what you're doing is you want to replace old, damaged, diseased tissue or cells with brand new, vibrant, healthy, strong, rejuvenated cells. This one I'm kind of laughing at right here, but one of the main things they found was tongue organoids. So when you fast, this is how you repair your tongue. Go to the book of James. He talks about the tongue a little bit. But also, look at the lung right here. Oh my goodness, I'm looking at the picture. I know you can't see what I'm looking at, but I'm just telling you. So between the lung and the stomach and even the prostate gland, all these stem cells started producing organoids that could go to these tissues and repair them. Here's the results. It was obvious that fasting had this really immense... Now, folks, I'm telling you, when I read people making comments, researchers, I don't really read the words really immense as a descriptive. And here's what they said. It was very obvious that fasting had this really immense effect on the ability of the intestinal crypts to form more organoids, which is stem cell driven. You know what that means? Repair. Repair. healing, 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 rejuvenation, regeneration. This says the first author. Her name is Maria Mihalova, which I'm guessing she's from Greece. No, I'm just joking. This was something that we saw both in the young mice, but also in the old mice or the aged mouse. You know what you should get from that? It's never too late to start taking care of yourself, is it? No, it's not. Now, I'll make this real fast, but you can't see the picture I'm looking at. But what they do is they take a picture of the intestinal stem cells from mice that fasted for 24 hours. That's at the right. You can't see it. But I'm just going to say they're very large. And they also take stem cells from mice that were able to eat as much as they want. They're pretty, pretty small. So what I want you to get from this, when you tap into getting your stem cells to start working better for you, that's how you heal your body. That's actually one of the ways that you prevent the body from aging prematurely. That's what you want. The larger the stem cell, the greater the capacity it has to make the very thing you need to repair yourself. It says the longer that the animals fasted, the stronger the stimulus for the stem cells to form organoids. Folks, I don't mind telling you, I've seen magical things happen with many patients when they start hitting that 36-hour mark or that 42-hour mark or that 48-hour mark. Or if you fasted a longer time, say 3 days, it's amazing the capacity of the body to switch gears and say, oh, I guess you're not going to feed us, so we're going to find a way to live and repair everything that we can. Here's the mechanism. During fasting, cells switch to fatty acids as fuel. That means fat. They start to produce more of an enzyme called carnitine palmityltransferase 1, which what it does is it pulls fatty acids into the mitochondria where they can be converted into energy. That means you burn fat for fuel. Anyway, here's the punchline right here. The real reason the study was done, it's fabulous, but the real reason they're doing it is because they're trying to come up with a drug that will do exactly what fasting will do. I'm not going to read all that stuff to you, but basically, they're looking for a drug that interacts with PPARS, which is a, The other researcher, his name is David Sabatini. The other purpose of the study is they did the fasting. It worked great. But what they really want is they want pharmacological targeting of this pathway that may provide a therapeutic opportunity to improve tissue homeostasis and age-related pathologies. Basically, they're looking for a drug called a PPAR delta antagonist. See, I know, I'm not going to get into all that. But you knew at the end of the day, they're not just doing research without dollar signs in the rear view, or in the front view mirror. Front view mirror, that didn't even make sense. What I mean is, you can't hide that stuff. What they want is the results of fasting were just incredible. But at the end of the day, are they trying to promote fasting or are they really looking for a drug, a pharmacological drug that will mimic what fasting is doing? I know, but that's just the way this is. That's the world that we're living in. It just is. There's no way around that. Are you with me? You tell me. You have to decide right now. What would you rather do? Something that is absolutely free. And when I say free, what do you think we're talking about? Actually, it would actually save you money. You know, there's a point in every human being's life where they just need to take a step back and say, you know what, maybe I just need to give my body a rest. I've been pushing it way too hard. I've been eating the wrong things. I've been under a tremendous amount of stress. Maybe I just need to take a step back. I need to fast and pray. I think that's a good call. Because when you fast, that's when the healing begins. Hey, read it for yourself. I can't remember. Is it Isaiah chapter 55, 6, 7, 8? Sorry, I should have looked that up. It's there somewhere. I'm really bad about that. Sometimes I'll think, I know where that scripture is. That's in the book of Isaiah, but it may not be there. It may be over in the book of Micah. But those are two quite incredible books in the Old Testament. They're certainly worthy of your time and your energy. The thing of it is, there's so many good takeaways. If you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. I think several people have tried to call, but I just wanted to complete those thoughts. I really appreciate your patience for sticking with me on that. But you get where I'm coming from, don't you? Every human being, we're living in a fallen world. You're going to need a healing every single day. So this is a tool that could be very beneficial. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm doing the fast, and I needed to know whether or not I should go ahead and take my supplements that I've been taking, like Thymex and Reno Food.
Yeah,
go ahead and take that?
You can. Or if you were going to fast for, say, 24 to 36 hours, you could even try taking without. Either way will work.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of ways to do this, but I think I'm a bigger fan of drinking lots of water and lots of herbal teas. I think if you made a cup of, say, hibiscus tea or peppermint tea or dandelion root or green or white tea, all those are going to count as water as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, okay. All right, and I had one more question. I had a varicose vein pop up, and it's really painful. So what can I do besides walking and stretching?
Well, if it's real painful, you might even try just rubbing some good old-fashioned castor oil on it to see if that'll decrease the inflammation very quickly. But the other thing that almost always works is fresh lemon juice.
Oh, just rub it on there
just rub it on there, the first one. You hit the nail on the head with your first choice. But it needs to be from a fresh lemon. I have not seen the lemon juice in the bottle that has lots of chemical preservatives. I haven't seen that work.
Okay.
See, I think what happens is there may be another component. Just because I don't know about it doesn't mean it's not real. But when you apply fresh lemon juice, what would happen to a seed from the lemon if you took it out? Could you eventually get that seed to sprout and grow a lemon tree?
Maybe so.
Yeah, and my point is, a living fresh lemon that has vital life force to it, whereas the pre-made, pasteurized, chemicalized lemon juice, it may not exactly have much life force left. I didn't say it didn't have benefit, but if you could rub fresh lemon juice several times a day, that may really, really help. I had a friend the other day that was telling me that his hemorrhoids were really giving him fits. And I said, well, if you'll just take a piece of sterile gauze or, you know, some type of clean cloth and squeeze fresh lemon juice, and I know this is graphic, but you just kind of tuck it up in there at night when you go to sleep, and what happens is you wake up and your hemorrhoid's gone. It just draws back into place. Mm-hmm. So lemon juice is really quite the incredible remedy.
Okay.
I wish we had more lemon trees here in Jacksonville.
I do, too. I tried to grow one, and I killed it. But anyway, I'll try again.
What do you mean you killed it? Did you say, go outside and play in the snow?
I don't know what I did. My thumb just doesn't work well with plants like that.
Well, don't give up. Keep trying. Hey, maybe if you squeeze some lemon juice on your varicose vein or the painful vein, just let that lemon juice soak in. But maybe there will be a seed that pops out, and you can just kind of set it to the side, and then maybe we can get it to sprout a little bit later, and maybe you can then put it in a pot.
Oh, we'll try it. Well, thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. Thanks. Hey, I wish you the best. Thanks for your phone call.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, if you'd like to join me, there's time for another phone call. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I really have seen some amazing results with lemon juice when it comes to varicose veins. And so what I'm suggesting is, I mean, you do know that lemon juice does not dissolve a varicose vein or a spider vein or whatever you want to call them in one nanosecond. It doesn't do that. You know, one of the roles of the immune system that may not be talked about enough is the role of the immune system in removing old damaged tissue from the body. See, it's easy for me to talk about, or it's easy for us to say, well, you've got these cells called natural killer cells in the immune system, and they're just constantly working through every nook and cranny of the body looking for a foreign virus. So like if somebody had the coronavirus, you want your immune system to say, here it is, we found it over here in the lung. We're going to go after it, we're going to corner it, beat it up and eat it. Or you might say, what about the immune system's role in keeping cancer at bay? Well, I'd say that's a very valid point. You want your immune system to be able to identify a cancer cell or a tumor and then get to work at trying to eat it or kill it or break it down. Does that make sense? But another part of the immune system is every tissue in your body. Can I use the liver as my example? Let's say that the average liver cell lives a full life. That's 42 days long. That's the lifespan of a liver cell, 42 days. Well, what's supposed to happen at the end of 42 days? Well, the liver cell dies, or it comes to the very end. It sends the chemical signal. It's called apoptosis. Well, you want your immune system to say, all right, we get it. Let's remove this old disease cell before it dies, and we're going to remove it. Well, if your immune system removes the old damaged liver cell, guess what happens? You've just created room for the immune system to grow a new, or for your liver to grow a brand new, healthy, brand spanking new, perfect liver cell so it can get to work at serving you. Does that make sense? I know I've said this before, but I'll say it again. One of the studies that I looked at, all they did was they tried to find out how do people live to be 92, 95, 98 years old, and they can still drive themselves to church on a Sunday morning, they can do their own yard work, they can make home repairs, they can still exercise, they can read, they can go and have fun with friends, they can go to the grocery store all by themselves, and they can shop for groceries, and they can come home and cook the food. And they can go fishing. Or maybe if they're 98 and they want to go deer hunting, they have enough strength and function left to where they can do that and really enjoy life. Does that make sense? Well, what do you do if you have a large number of people that are somewhere between 58 years of age all the way up to 67 and they die? And on the death certificate, doctor that did the autopsy says they died of natural causes. Or maybe what I should have said is age-related diseases. Does that make sense? Well, the answer is real simple. When they've done studies on these two groups of people that are about 30 years apart, one group lives 30 years longer with very few health problems or diseases, and the other one seems to die of these diseases called heart disease and cancer and diabetes and you know, stuff like that. It's the immune system. It's really, I'm trying to make it sound simple, but what happens is, if your immune system works about 10% better, the reason I like reading this stuff is because if you look at me and say, hey, Roy, your immune system is going to have to work 10,000% better if you're going to live, well, that's going to be pretty discouraging because I'm going to think, well, how's that going to happen? But 10%, that means you make some changes to your diet. You begin the exercise. You take good care of yourself. And it may be for some people, you just need some supplementation to try to target the weak organs or glands. But yeah, it's really as simple as that. The people that live to be 95 years old and they still can function, it's because their immune system works about 10% better. So maybe it comes down to, do I need to give up something that's beating my immune system to a pulp? Well, yeah. And for some people, that might be horrific unforgiveness that you're hanging on to. It really could be. Or maybe bitterness or severe anger that is undealt with. That may be what's dragging your immune system totally down. It doesn't have to always be a high sugar diet or being an alcoholic or a drug user. Oh, no, no, no. You can have plenty of things like unforgiveness. Anyway, I've really enjoyed being with you this Saturday morning. This is Health Essentials. You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyre, Longview.